Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show with Jason Hartman. The economic storm brewing around the world is set to spill into all aspects of our lives. Are you prepared? Where are you going to turn for the critical life skills necessary to survive and prosper? The Holistic Survival Show is your family's insurance for a better life. Jason will teach you to think independently, to understand threats, and how to create the ultimate action plan. Sudden change or worst case scenario, you'll be ready. Welcome to Holistic Survival, your key resource for protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Jason Hartman.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman, where we talk about protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in these uncertain times. We have a great interview for you today, and we will be back with that in less than 60 seconds on the Holistic Survival Show. And by the way, be sure to visit our website at holisticsurvival.com. You can subscribe to our blog, which is totally free, has loads of great information, and there's just a lot of good content for you on the site. So make sure you take advantage of that at holisticsurvival.com. We'll be right back.
Now's your opportunity to get the Financial Freedom Report. The Financial Freedom Report provides financial self-defense in uncertain times, and it's your source for innovative, forward-thinking investment property strategies and advice. Get your newsletter subscription today. You get a digital download and even more. The price, only $197. Go to jasonhartman.com to get yours today.
My pleasure to welcome Bill Osmundson to the show. He is an expert on the subject of fluoride, or more specifically, fluoridation in our water supply. And, you know, for a long time I've heard the rumors about how fluoride is dumbing us down, and that's the reason the government puts it in the water under the guise of preventing tooth decay and so forth. But now we have a practicing dentist who for many years believed in fluoridation and has changed his thoughts on that, and I'll let him tell you the story. Bill, welcome to the show. How are you?
Very nice to be with you, Jason, and it's going to be a great time together.
Good, good. Well, you're coming to us today from just south of Portland, Oregon, and tell us your story, how you believed in fluoridation for so many years and then had a change of mind on the subject.
Well, yes, I first of all got my master's in public health in nutrition, health education, then went into dental school, and my idea at first was to go into third world countries and because I was grew up in Africa and helped them in developing countries. But after I got out of dental school, I had so much school debt that I really couldn't go for quite a while. And by the time I got into private practice, I realized that we have just as many problems here in the United States, North America, as we do over in third world countries. They're just different kinds of problems. So I never did get back to any third world country to work as a dentist. And I feel like we have a lot here that we can improve on. You know, I went back to where I grew up in Kenya, and as I was standing there on the street corner, I just started watching the people in Nairobi, and I thought, you know, I still haven't seen anybody that's really obese. Now, I know there are obese people there, but I just hadn't seen obese. We have more of a malnutrition problem in the United States than we do in Kenya, in these third world countries. So it's easy to look at somebody else and say how bad they are, but when we look in the mirror, sometimes it's not as pretty as we'd like. So with fluoridation, it was really the third thing that I found on dentistry that was a problem. I know that we have a problem with our mercury fillings. In fact, there's some news that just came out yesterday from the World Health Organization, and they're recommending that we discontinue the use of mercury fillings in the mouth. It's an absolutely insane concept in this day and age to be putting mercury in somebody's mouth, trillions of times more concentrated than in the rivers, which is prohibited to be putting it into the rivers, and that they were concerned about. The next one was in migraines, headaches, TMJ, TMD, facial head pain, muscle pain of the head. We dentists are responsible for the muscles of the head. And when we put the teeth into a position where the muscles have to work hard and are not comfortable at rest, we increase and cause temporomandibular disorder. It's very, very discouraging. So I was walking up and down the hall waiting for my next patient and in my office, and I thought, you know, if there's two things that we are really wrong on problems come in threes. And I was passing a basket on the floor that had toothpaste in it that we give out as samples. And I thought, oh, I don't even want to look at it. I hadn't looked at it since dental school. I really wasn't interested in fluoridation. I knew it was safe and effective. I knew I could see it in my patients' mouths, that it was a benefit. I just knew it was all good. So why do I open up this can of worms that my patients had been telling me, look once again at fluoridation and look at the fluoride issue? And I thought, I really don't want to. But I hadn't for about 30, 25 years. And it was time I looked at it, because I'd just gotten a call again from another water district saying, is it safe? Is it effective? Should we use it? And I said, of course it's safe and effective. Of course you should use it. And I thought, you know, I never looked at the research. I never looked at what was happening. It's time I look at the research again. And after I looked at the research, it was like a knee in the gut. It's not safe. It's not effective. And we're getting far too much from too many sources. It was absolutely terrible.
Very interesting. So let's just go on the fluoride thing first. Many years ago, when I was a kid, I heard that the government puts fluoride in the water to dumb people down. First of all, does fluoride dumb one down? Is that true?
Well, you know, that's not the intention. That's really not
right. But does
that.
It do that? I mean, you know, let's assume there's no big conspiracy.
We don't want it to do that.
Yeah.
But absolutely it does, especially cognitive reasoning. But that's not why the government does it. That's a side effect that we don't like, and we need to get into that and some of the other risks, but you're absolutely correct, and it's not a conspiracy in the sense that this is some sort of bizarre government taking over the world to change us. They are trying to change us on our teeth. They just aren't looking at the science. For instance, who promotes the fluoridation is the Center for Disease Control is one of the biggest pushers of this drug. It's not an approved drug. And they're saying it's safe and effective, safe and effective. But if you read their website carefully, they'll be right up front saying it's not the responsibility of the Center for Disease Control to determine the safety of fluoridation. So they're really not looking at safety. And if you say, well, who at the CDC is really pushing this? It's the oral health division, which may be demoted to something less than a division here in a bit. But the dentists, there's a handful of dentists who are saying it's really safe and effective, it's really good, and so they promote it along with the American Dental Association, a handful of dentists. Dentists don't diagnose IQ, they don't diagnose the brain, they don't diagnose the kidney, they don't diagnose the rest of the bones, they don't diagnose the thyroid or all these other organs. They look just at the teeth. And so the government is looking at teeth. They're not looking at any risks involved, and it does dumb us down. To get more specific, and since you brought it up, and we need to do it, it dumbs us down by about 8 IQ points. 6 to 8 IQ points is what the research is showing. When you compare the states in the United States, ranking them on the percentage of the population fluoridated in each state, those states that are having more people fluoridated have a tripling of the mental retardation, which is about the equivalent of a half a standard deviation on a bell curve, which is the equivalent of about 8 IQ drop. Now, when they go and they measure communities of the serum fluoride levels, they find that indeed there's about a 6 to 10 IQ point drop in areas where they have an increase in fluoride. Now, when they do the IQ study tests, they find that the biggest problem is with cognitive reasoning. And that's another issue. But let's get down to the bottom line here. The worst thing that's happening is to the brain. You know, even if it was helping the teeth and it doesn't, if you're going to say, what's more important, my teeth or my brain? You know, we can fix teeth. We can't fix brain. You don't have the IQ. We can't get you more IQ. If your child is mentally retarded, we can't fix that usually. And the burden to society with an 8 IQ point drop, they've done a lot of studies in IQ and income. And for every IQ point less that people have is the equivalent of about $1,000 less in income. Well, if you take 8 IQ drop, that's roughly $8,000 a year lower income. Multiply that by roughly 200 million people in North America that are fluoridated, and you're looking at, 1.6 trillion dollars damage. That's another Iraqi war type of thing. I mean, the loss of income, the loss of money based on the lower income, lower IQ, is huge. Now, that doesn't really show all the problems because it goes through the entire IQ spectrum, so that we have about a third as many of the very gifted. We have a tripling of the number of the mentally retarded or mentally handicapped. Scientifically, it's called mentally retarded. And then we have the whole gamut in the middle, the rest of us in the middle who are skewed down by more IQ points down.
I've got a question, though, on that, Bill.
Sure.
So that's interesting about the IQ and income, the $1,000 per year in income for each IQ point. But I don't know if this is really just a matter of IQ per se. You know, I've also heard that fluoridation may make people just generally more apathetic. So it's not just a matter, I mean, there are smart people who are apathetic. So, you know,
yes.
It may be more just more passive in general. Is that another element of this, or is that?
Absolutely. You're right on. Back in 1859, the first real study that they did with fluoride was they gave fluoride to a dog, and they created a goiter in the dog. So they knew that the thyroid got bigger when you ended up with an increase of fluoride. So to counteract the goiter problem, when I was in the School of Public Health, we went to a place in the Philippines where they had goiters, and I said to my major professor, so if they just had a little more iodine, that would take care of their goiters, right? And he said, yeah. I said, so what caused the goiter? And he looked at me and said, you're going into dental school. We don't want to talk about that. I said, now, come on. He was an MD. And he said, well, it's because they're getting too much fluoride in this area. When you get too much fluoride, why then your thyroid decreases the amount of production, and to compensate for that, the body grows a bigger thyroid called a goiter. And so to counteract the excess fluoride, why then we start adding more iodine to try to correct for that. When we reduce the thyroid function, we make people less active. We make them so that they're a little bit, I use the term, tired or lazy, or I don't care what kind of term you want to do it. They just don't have the energy to do as much. So to get the energy, they eat more. And we end up with thyroid problems is tending to have more obesity. We end up with more diabetes because of that and other kinds of diseases. But that's one of the problems, that it hits the thyroid. And back around the 1920s and 30s, before World War II, they used fluoride as a drug to calm children down, as an attention deficit disorder drug. In fact, they still use it. Attention deficit disorder drugs usually have fluoride in them. But the fluoride would reduce the thyroid and calm the child down. In fact, one physician wrote in a publication, just continue giving them fluoride, because in time they will calm down. You just have to continue using the fluoride. So it does cause them to become a little more docile, a little bit less reactive by having the fluoride.
Wow, that's scary. Okay, so can we do anything to limit the amount of fluoride? I mean, just don't drink tap water, or don't... I mean, does it matter if you... I mean, if you're showering in tap water, washing your hands in tap water, is it leaching into our bodies that way as well?
Yes, and that's very discouraging. But you say, how do we get rid of it? Let me give you an example. I have a friend who has a son who's about 26. He's autistic. He's been autistic since about the age of 2 or 3, and the mom knows that her son, throughout his life, has had a terrible problem with drugs, medications, anything for pain. He has lots of pain. When he has the pain, his doctors have all said, well, give him pain medication. When she gives him the pain medication, he has bad reactions to it, so she doesn't give him the pain medication because of the bad reactions. And she's trying to find out what's causing the bad reactions. So one day, a friend of hers said, you know, you need to be sure you don't give him fluoridated water. And she said, what? So she went to the store and got some bottled water and started giving him bottled water. And he really improved. Now, he's still autistic, but his pain decreased. He didn't scream like he was doing before with pain. I mean, little tiny things can set him off. Just even a felt pen can set him off because of the smell of it. Photocopiers can give him problems. I mean, he's very, very chemically sensitive. And so she felt like that was great. And she was so excited, she started to help me on some of his fluoride problems. But then another friend said, well, you know, he's still taking a bath in the shower. Have you done anything about that, getting rid of the fluoride there? And she said, oh my, I hadn't even thought about that. So what had been happening before is he had sort of a job at a school where he was doing some just simple tasks. And when they would give him a bath in the morning, he couldn't go to work because it was just so, he was in so much pain. So they would start to give him a bath at night, and he would pace the floor screaming. You know, he's a good 220, 230-pound young man and very, very strong, tall. And so here's this ferociously angry man at night. She said, you know, I know him, he knows me, but sometimes it's a little scary the way he is so strong, he's so big, and he's in so much pain, screaming for help. And so what I did is I said, well, let's try not giving him the fluoridated water for the bath. And she said he sleeps at night, he goes to work during the day, he's still autistic, but he's not having that bad reaction. So she now heats her water on the stove and puts it in his bath so he can take a bath without the fluoridated water.
So heating the water kills the fluoride or destroys it?
No, unfortunately. That's like when I was in Africa. We used to boil the water to make it safe from pathogens. But fluoride does not go into the air as a gas at boiling temperatures. Now, you can boil off the chlorine, you can boil the bugs, but you can't boil out the fluoride. So if you have fluoridated water, which most people in the United States do, about 75% have fluoridated water, then you cannot boil it off. If you have it in your teapot and you keep adding water to your teapot, you're concentrating the fluoride, getting it stronger and stronger. So this is a serious problem that you can't boil it off. Home filters, the traditional like Brita, those kinds of things, do not take the fluoride out. You have to go with a reverse osmosis, and that's a problem because it makes the water very acidic. So a lot of us have gone to getting ionized water where we can get the pH back up to where it's supposed to be. So it's not easy to get the water out, the fluoride out of the water.
So what does one do then to limit their fluoride intake? I mean,
excellent question. There are many sources of fluoride. The National Research Council says that water is the primary source of fluoride for most people. So if you can not drink your fluoridated water in beverages, not drink it and mixing it with your tea or your juices and not drinking it for your water, you're going to get rid of pretty close to half of what most people have as their fluoride intake, which would be excellent. The second thing to do is your toothpaste is the second most common source of fluoride. The tube on the toothpaste says do not swallow. The Food and Drug Administration has approved fluoride over-the-counter use. They have not approved fluoride for swallowing for tooth decay, but they in the Center for Drug Evaluation and Research, where they approve drugs, they haven't approved it. But in the in over-the-counter, they have. And in it, it says do not swallow. They're very serious about it. They also say use a pea-sized amount of toothpaste, and they're serious about that. Why? Because a pea-sized amount of toothpaste has a quarter milligram of fluoride. They're concerned about a quarter milligram of fluoride, not to swallow it. That's the same amount of fluoride that is found in every glass of fluoridated water. In other words, one branch of the government says you have to swallow what the other branch of the government is saying, do not swallow.
Well, that's the typical government thing where these branches are conflicting. This happens all the time with the legal system where the laws conflict with one another, and it leaves a business person at a loss. They want to obey the law, but they don't know which one to obey.
You're exactly right. And the thing about it is it's usually the water districts, public health departments, who are the least competent to decide whether this fluoride is safe for everyone, which it's not. And the Food and Drug Administration, Center for Drug Evaluation and Research, that's what Congress has given them the job to do. And so if we're going to say, well, do I listen to the city council, who are made up of school teachers and plumbers and business people and those kinds of things, and they're going to evaluate the science and give it to me with or without consent? Or do I go to the Food and Drug Administration, Center for Drug Evaluation and Research, who are, that's their full-time job. That's what Congress has told them to do. They have the policies, the procedures to look it over, to do the best. And it's those people that should be taking the bull by the horns or the fluoride by the jar and saying, look, we're not going to do this until it gets approved. Fluoridation should not be put in the water until it's approved by the FDA, CDER. They probably would not approve it.
Yeah, right, right. Have we sort of covered most of the things on the fluoride topic? Because I want to ask you about the mercury and some of the other issues.
No, well, there's a few more things on the fluoride.
Yeah, let's kind of wrap up on the fluoride. I want to ask you about mercury because a lot of people talk about that too.
Sure, sure. One of the other things that caught my attention was mother's milk. Now, for babies, everyone says that mother's milk is the ideal nutrition, against which all other forms of nutrition should be judged, according to the American Academy of Pediatrics. Mother's milk has no detectable fluoride in most samples that were tested. When they do detect it, it's at like a mean level of 0.004 parts per million, almost nothing in it. If a caregiver provides an infant with formula made with fluoridated water, that's hundreds of times more concentrated with fluoride than mother's milk. Now, you either have to say, look, the city, the water district is correct in giving my infant this fluoridated water with all this fluoride, or mother's milk is correct. They aren't both correct. The difference is way, way too far in difference. And the baby's brain is developing. This is where when they do testing on the infant or when they do autopsies on fetuses, they find that the brain has not developed as well is in animals two-thirds the weight when they have low levels of fluoride in the water for the mother. So the first place we need to really look for sure, it may be a problem with the egg and the sperm, but at least we need to be saying to mothers, the same as we do with smoking and alcohol, do not drink this water if you're pregnant, because the fluoride does cross the placenta to the infant. With mother's milk, the infant is protected more, but if the infant is getting formula, they should not have that formula made with fluoridated water. It's not going to prevent decay. We can go on and on and on how it's not going to prevent the decay. When we look at countries of the world, most developed countries of the world do not fluoridate, and they've reduced decay just as much as we have in the United States with fluoridation. If you look at before we fluoridated water, decay dropped in half before we even started fluoridated water. It's continued the same rate, same amount after fluoridation was started. So there's a good chance that fluoridation really played no effect on it because other countries have done the same thing. We've done the same thing. Everybody's done it with or without fluoridated water. So it does not reduce tooth decay when you swallow it. Topically, there is reasonable evidence, I think, that topical does reduce tooth decay some. But the risks are high enough that I feel that if a person is having dental decay, what they need to do is start brushing and flossing their teeth more accurately. It's not that people aren't trying. Well, some aren't trying, but most people are trying. It's the accuracy of the cleaning. That's one thing. The second thing is
diet. You say accuracy, you're talking really about the mechanical action of the toothbrush, right?
Exactly. Exactly. We've got about 140 different or 128 different places in the mouth that we need to clean. If you had 128 of anything and tried to do it in a minute or two, you'd have a hard time doing it. So we've got all these curves and in between the teeth and around the teeth and in the grooves. We've got to spend the quality time mechanically disturbing that bacteria and that plaque and those bugs and trying to get them so that they are not there.
So for how long should one brush? I mean, is it a two-minute process? This is interesting. We'll get a little lesson on this, a little primer on this, since we've got the dentist on the line.
That we should spend about 3 minutes on the brushing. I like to brush my teeth when I'm in the shower. The toothpaste doesn't really do a whole lot for us. But the topical, think of fluoride like you do suntan lotion. on the surface of the tooth, it has some benefit, but swallowing it, you don't swallow suntan lotion, you don't want to swallow it. But on the brushing, make sure you get to the very back teeth. You get in the, as well in the grooves as you can, and you can't clean those grooves.
What's the best toothbrush to use? An electric toothbrush, a Sonicare, those types of things, or are those gimmicks?
And they're gimmicks, but for some people, they help you because they have a little timer on it, so that it helps you brush a little bit longer. Sometimes people say that, you know, I don't have to move my hand when I've got this electric toothbrush. Okay, well, fine. You don't get the exercise. That's okay. No problem. Just hold your hand more still and let it do it. It may be a little bit faster because the toothbrush moves fast. I think some of the ultrasonic stuff does help a little bit, but it doesn't. It's just not going to take care of the significant problems of preventing all decay. It'll help on the periodontal disease more than it does even on the decay. Decay is more of a factor of diet. For instance, if you see baby and they have bottle caries, and this is one reason public health people say, well, we got to fluoridate people to get rid of this bottle caries. It's the bottle that's doing it. Putting a baby to bed with a bottle rots the teeth because the baby will suckle just a little bit with that juice or that milk, and it'll stay on the teeth. And there's not the swallowing, not the saliva action while they're asleep, and they'll rot the top teeth, usually because the tongue is protecting the bottom teeth more. So diet is, I think, a bigger component of preventing decay than even the brushing and the flossing, although I think you need to do both. But sticky foods, sugar foods, getting your general health really good is more important than all the gimmicks and the potions and the chemicals. In America, we go by corporatocracy. We go by Wall Street. We go by advertising, marketing, all these types of things. If you've got a product to sell, then it becomes famous. And so we try to push a pill for every ill so that we can give you a bill for that pill. And that's all it does is we do. It's a marketing gimmick where in reality, maybe don't do any of the pills. Don't throw chemicals at the ills. Just do some very good general diet and careful cleaning, and you're going to be the best off for that. And then one other thing that I think is very important is if people want more information, they need to contact probably three main big sources that I can highly recommend. One is fluoridealert.org. is a good web page, and you can spend days on that one because there's so many research articles in there. You have to look around for them. They've changed their website. So you have to look for them just a little bit, but there's thousands of them in there, or hundreds anyway, at least, I think probably close to 1,000 or two. And then another one is SL Web, like Second Look, slweb.org. And another one is WashingtonSafeWater.com. So those are three good sites that you can find lots of research and lots of more information on it. Dig into this issue deeper. And of course, there's the CDC and the American Dental Association websites for some of the other side of the issue, which you have to look at the research and say, well, what's the story with this research? And so let me talk about that just very briefly. There are no randomized controlled trials with fluoridated water. There should be, and we can do randomized controlled trials, but the government has never done it, at least, and had it published. They may have done it, but they haven't published it. So all of the studies that have been published have been lower quality studies, open to real dispute and controversy. So we don't have good quality research. The research that we do have, I think, raises enough questions that we need to give people freedom to choose. You know, the public health laws are the strongest laws that are possible. We think that the Patriot Act is strong. Look, public health people could quarantine anyone or any groups of people that they want for as long as they want. That's what public health is all about. We can say, okay, these group of people here, you're going to be locked away in some shed for who knows how many years because we're scared of you. Public health laws are very, very powerful, and this is how we get fluoridation into the water. It's used under police powers, saying that we're going to prevent this highly contagious disease. Only it's not highly contagious. And so they use the laws for the wrong purpose. It's really sad.
Okay, can we shift gears and talk about mercury for a moment before we wrap up?
Absolutely.
So the mercury fillings, so people say that the mercury fillings, mercury is probably the most poisonous substance on Earth, and they're saying that they leach into the bloodstream, into the body, and that's what happens with these fillings. So should one get all of these old mercury fillings out of one's mouth immediately? Is that an urgent issue or not that urgent? Leave well enough alone. If they're in there, they're in there.
The short answer is yes, get them all out. I wouldn't do them all at one time, but yes, they should be out for three major reasons. The dental associations have said previously that if we took mercury fillings out on the suggestion or recommendation of the dentist, that it was unethical, and some people have lost their licenses over that. But most haven't. When I first, when I was young, I had a patient come in who said, I want to have my black fillings taken out, and I want a biodegradable filling. And I just laughed, and I said, well, you mean you want to have one that doesn't have the mercury? And she said, yes, I do. And I said, well, my eyes rolled up. I remember it very clearly. I looked up to make sure no one was listening because you weren't supposed to talk to patients about this. And I said, you know, it's unethical for me to do that, but I understand that this is important to you. If you don't tell anyone, I'll do it for you. She said, I won't tell anybody. So I took the fillings out, and what was a surprise to me, because the tooth looked wonderful. The filling was extremely well done. It had smooth margins. Nothing was wrong with that filling. I was taking it out purely because this person I felt was, you know, wacko. She was just a holistic whatever. I mean, she was a tree hugger. I mean, this was terrible. And I took it out, and I remember looking inside that tooth going, oh my goodness, this has a bunch of decay in here. And I cleaned out the decay and put the filling in, and I said, you know, it's a good idea that you had it taken out. And I took the next one out, and it had decay also. And, of course, patients started to come in more and more saying, I want my mercury out, and I started taking them out. I went to a continuing education course, and one of my colleagues was there, and I said, you know, I'm doing something that I feel a little bit guilty about. I'm taking out fillings that are just fine, and as I'm taking them out because of the mercury concern, I'm seeing decay under them. And the dentist looked at me and he smiled and he said, yeah, about 80% of the time. I said, yeah, how'd you know? He said, I'm doing the same thing. But of course, we didn't talk about it back then. I recommend all fillings be taken out because mercury fillings be taken out because the mercury leaks and we get decay around it. And somewhere around the 80% of the time, that tooth has decay under there. But the mercury is so toxic that the decay moves very slowly. You can wait until it gets big and then have the filling replaced with a crown, or you can take it out when it's smaller. The second thing is that the mercury is constantly coming off. If you go to www.IAOMT, that stands for the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology.org, you'll find there some videos, some short videos, of showing the mercury as they're brushing the filling, as they're rubbing the filling, as they're scraping the filling on extracted teeth, and the mercury vapor that's coming off. That stuff is going into your body, and it's not healthy. It's not good. Now, there are different kinds of mercury that are in nature. Some of them are not as toxic as others, but it's still coming off, and the bacteria can change that mercury into a very toxic type of mercury in your sulcuses around your teeth. So it is a concern, it is a problem, and I do recommend that we have those things taken out. Besides, they're uglier and thin.
What is the mercury doing? Is it a brain disease problem?
Again, it goes to the brain. It goes throughout all the body, but of course it's hard in the kidneys. Like fluoride, it's hard on the kidneys. But we're definitely looking at some real problems with the brain. For instance, with Alzheimer's, you're looking at one of the biomarkers of Alzheimer's is the amygdaloid tangle, the mercury that's in that complex. And I'm not a neurologist nor a neurosurgeon, but that's one of the things they look for is the mercury in the brain. And the mercury gets there from somewhere. Your fillings are right close when you inhale, when you breathe. It's going into your body. It's really a problem. I'm reading you just a little bit of some of the warnings that are given to the dentist.
Yeah, just read those real quickly if you would, and then let's wrap up because we're running a little long. But this is a very interesting topic. And you know the nice thing about this topic is that it's something that we can all do something about versus some of the other topics we cover on the show where it's like bad news, but there's nothing we can really do about it except be frightened or discouraged.
Yes, and when you go in to talk to your dentist and say, you know, I'm starting to have concerns that my teeth may split or crack or break because of the mercury that's expanding in my tooth, I just don't want it in my mouth. If the dentist says, oh, well, it's just fine, it's good, you don't have it in there, I would find a different dentist. If they say, certainly, I understand, respect that, we'll give you some oxygen as we're taking it out so that you don't have to breathe that mercury and the decay and all the rest of it as we're taking it out. We'll use a rubber dam. We'll be very careful and protect you from getting the mercury out. I'm going to wear a special mercury mask to protect myself. The IAOMT has a list of dentists who will help you do that. You need to make sure that you're not breathing that stuff. And if the dentist doesn't have concern about it, he's not going to have concern for you. And if he doesn't want to take the filling on out, it's probably because he's not having success with the tooth colored kind of fillings, and you don't want him to do the dentistry. So if they're really not happy about taking out your mercury fillings that they just put in, then I would find a different dentist. So the manufacturer says, do not swallow or take internally. I called the manufacturer up and I said, so inside the tooth, inside the mouth, is that considered internal? They wouldn't respond. Said, do not breathe the vapor. Well, hang on a second. It's in my mouth every time I chew, every time I breathe, every time I take a hot glass of water. I'm breathing the stuff. Use protective masks during placement and removal. The manufacturer is saying I'm supposed to wear a mercury protective mask, give oxygen or artificial respiration. Do not dispose in the regular garbage. There are all kinds of different things that are there. The list goes on even more to things such as you shouldn't give it to girls or women who may become pregnant. You should not give it to people who may get kidney problems. You don't want to give it to children. There are almost no people, there's a certain group of men that you might be able to give it to as long as you get the fillings on and out before they start getting older. So it just should not be used. I mean, this is
Yeah. Yeah, well, good points. Well, give out your website if you would, and just let people know where they can find out more about you, and you've given out some other good resources as well.
Sure. If you want to contact me for references and everything, contact me at bill@teachingsmiles.com, TEACHINGSMILES.com. Also, you can just do a search for my name, Bill Osmunson, OSMUNSON, video, and you'll see a video that was done. There's several of them there on YouTube that will give you more simple explanation. But fluoridealert.org is a real good one to look up.
Good stuff. Well, Bill Osmunson, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate the info.
Thank you very much, Jason, for having me, and you have a great day.
What's great about the shows you'll find on jasonhartman.com is that if you want to learn about investing in and managing income properties for college students, there's a show for that. If you want to learn how to get noticed online and in social media, there's a show for that. If you want to know how to save on life's largest expense, there's a show for that. And if you'd like to know about America's crime of the century, there's even a show for that. Yep, there's a show for just about anything. Only from jasonhartman.com. Or type in Jason Hartman in the iTunes store.
Thank you for joining us today for the Holistic Survival Show, protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Be sure to listen to our Creating Wealth Show, which focuses on exploiting the financial and wealth creation opportunities in today's economy. Learn more at www.jasonhartman.com or search Jason Hartman on iTunes. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, offering very general guidelines and information. Opinions of guests are their own, and none of the content should be considered individual advice. If you require personalized advice, please consult an appropriate professional. Information deemed reliable, but not guaranteed.